Chapter 33. Ron overslept and missed his third consecutive Western Civ class. He looked at the clock and kicked himself out of bed. He wanted to know why someone hadn't gotten him up. He came into the kitchen after his stepfather had left for the day, and while his mother was having coffee or preparing one of her endless lists. "Why didn't anybody have the common decency to wake me up?"
"I don't know," said Marjorie.
"You people never forgot to wake me up when it was time for me to go to IBM," he said and slammed into the bathroom.
"Look," she shouted at the closed door.
"Don't start your shit first thing in the morning. I don't want to have my stomach frigged up for the rest of the day. You'll just let off your steam, walk out of here with nothing bothering you, and I'll wind up with another ulcer."
"I just asked why nobody woke me up," he said, coming out of the bathroom.
"Do you ever see what you look like when someone forgets to wake you up in time?"
"You're gonna keep it up," she screamed, and slammed down her coffee cup so that the liquid spilled over the list.
"I asked you to leave me alone because I just woke up, and I've got to get myself ready for the week. But I can't even have a goddamn coffee in me. Not me." She raised her voice to a painful shriek. "Go ahead, Ronald. Run the house and have everything your own friggin' way, you rotten little son of a bitch."
He thought, "That's what I am for sure." But he decided not to say any more and was out of the house in 20 minutes. They didn't speak to each other again until he said goodbye, and she barely answered him. Hank got up before Jolie was awake and went out to get some breakfast buns and the newspaper. Monday morning was the beginning of her time off with Hank. Hank wanted to treat her to a sense of holiday. He made coffee and opened to the classified section of the newspaper. He looked for openings under actuarial analysts. He wouldn't like the work, but the pay would be good, and Jolie would like seeing him put on a suit every morning. The insurance men who came into Wellmont for lunch and once told him that he would do very well in that field if he was interested. Hank saw himself nestled in the ponds of the good hands people. Then he was sitting on top of a bronze horse, leading the charge to freedom and respectability. There were no openings for analysts without experience. He turned to the driver section of the classified listings. There was an opening for a delivery man to drive light van. Over 18, good driving record, must have knowledge of the area. He grimaced when he read the last part. He was certain he would get lost immediately. His mother had given him the $30 his father had left for him and added $30 of her own to make sure he had enough. Hank felt the money in his shirt pocket. If he really had a choice, he would like to work at Bell Labs. He knew that they paid people to do nothing but think stuff up there. He was willing to think about anything they told him to think about, as long as they left him alone and took care of him. He had always dreamed of working for Bell Labs. The only thing he still needed was some kind of an advanced mathematics degree and a more fluent knowledge of computers. That would be easy. He had learned RPG in an hour. By the end of the first day, he had written 4 very simple and successful programs. They had all run without a hitch. Hank decided to drive out to the labs and make a general application. Maybe he could find a place to start him, and he could finish the rest of his education on a tuition refund plan. Maybe he wouldn't even have to go back to school. Perhaps they would take him under their collective wing and show him all he ever needed to know about anything. Hank pictured himself in the study with a few small plaques on the wall, an honorary degree from MIT and one from the University of Chicago in appreciation for his contributions in the field of mathematical discovery of human good. Hank smiled to himself, That seemed admirable, and yet vague enough not to be limiting. Jolie came out of the bedroom, hiding her face in a blank stare. She saw Hank had been out for breakfast stuff and had made coffee. She allowed her mouth to smile, rummaged through the bag of buns, and poured a cup of coffee. When he was pretty sure she'd fully woken up, he said, "Would you like to take a ride down Murray Hill with me today?" She smiled and thought at least he didn't plan to sit around the house and mope all day. She tilted her head to the side and took hold of his arm. "What are we going to go do down there?" "I'm going to apply for a job at Bell Labs," he said, with a tone of determination in her voice. "Okay," she said happily, bringing her arm to her chest and hugging him. The breakfast was the best meal they'd had together in weeks. Jolie allowed herself to loosen up and comment freely with the sense of humor that Hank found delightfully contagious. They kissed with gentle lips that left them dizzy. Recently, when she wanted to get laid, she mashed her mouth down on his like he was some kind of a vegetable she was about to consume. But now they touched deliciously. They made love rocking back and forth. She closed her eyes and cried softly about how good it felt. At the height of her moaning, Hank felt himself start to orgasm. They were going to get there together. Hank had made a hole in one. He held his body still while his hips bucked the sperm into her. She had her legs back as far as she could and was sucking it out of him with her cunt. "You're so good to me," she said. She held him and patted his behind the way she'd seen the football players congratulate each other on TV. Hank felt so good. Sex should be peaceful, he thought, allowing himself to drift. Ron carried the first gaze container into the commuter room without thinking about the tape he'd heard. He would have been smarter to have been taking notes than getting stoned. He couldn't write a single line about it because he couldn't remember the name of the chick on the tape. He found the notification of the November 18th moratorium included in a Liberation News Service press release that was in his mailbox. It was only 5 days from now. What was he supposed to have organized in 5 fucking days? He decided to call a staff meeting for that afternoon. Maybe not everyone would be able to get there on short notice, but some of them could at least get started on something. The idea of a series of demonstrations designed to bring good information about the war to people was what he was after. They were a newspaper. They were supposed to keep people informed about things. He posted a sign on the commuter room that announced a 1 o'clock meeting. Ron and his second container were waiting for class. Lashley entered the room, and Ron was surprised to see that he had chopped off most of his hair that had been curling down to his shoulders. He had also shaved off his chin beard and sideburns. His clothing was the same jeans and vest getup, but he exchanged his tiny square green lenses for clear lens, black frame plastic ones. Ron wondered if pressure had been put on Lashley by the administration. He decided to find out after class. The full weight of the commuter was behind Lashley if they were fucking him over because he wanted to dress in a way that made him feel comfortable. Lashley began his class. "I want to talk about Dante and explore a little of what he finds for the rest of his descent through hell, and for some reason not as half as eloquent and passionate, ascent toward God." The hand of the big blonde kid with hair down his back was raised. Lashley seemed a bit stunned. "I haven't said anything yet," he said, looking at the kid. Kid grinned broadly and put his hand down and spoke anyway. "How come you look so funny?" A relieved laughter smattered through the class. "Why do I look funny?" said Lashley. Irene, sitting in her usual seat in the front row, folded her arms across her chest and turned around with a smug look on her face. "You know," said the kid, making an imaginary scissor-cutting imaginary hair gesture. "I know," said Lashley, "that I was at a party this weekend, a get-together with some of the students that I had last year and some of the students that I'm teaching now. It's a tradition I enjoyed very much when I was a student, the opportunity to sit around, drink some beer and wine with my teachers and friends. I can truly say that I learned as much, if not more, on those occasions than I learned studying or in class." Ron nodded his head. That was how he learned best, too, by listening to and talking with other people. "Well, this weekend, there was a gathering at Jim McFibber's house." Ron knew the name belonged to one of the other young teachers in the department. He looked around the class and tried to figure out who was there. The people suspected were mostly looking at each other and smiling. When their eyes met, Jade was one of them. Ron looked away quickly so that she wouldn't see him looking in her direction. "What happened this weekend has convinced me that this generation has lost its sense of creativity and maybe its soul. Its members have certainly lost the desire to use their brains." There was a startled shifting of body position that reminded Ron of his first class. "I know that this idea of drugs and the pursuit of the East is unhealthy and potentially fatal. The way this Love and Woodstock generation is frantically trying to become unconscious is sick. All any of my students wanted to do was get stoned to the point of physical and mental immobility. I tried talking to people who fell over in the middle of conversations. When I did bring them back to their senses, the first thing they wanted to do was knock themselves back out. You people can do that with your lives if you want to, but I want no part of it." The blonde kid brushed the hair from his eyes and spoke again. "I was there." He paused and looked around the room. "It seemed that everybody just wanted to have a good time." Lashley nodded at him emphatically. "If drugging yourselves into oblivion is the way you have a good time, then I don't want any part of it." The kid turned around to look at his friends. Ron noticed red splotches on the kid's face that seemed to justify what Lashley was saying. How could you believe somebody with a splotchy face, as opposed to someone who had given a situation hard thought and come up with a solid conclusion? A hand went up in the back of the room. Lashley pointed at it. "It's just that not everybody is interested in getting to heavy raps all the time," said a voice that Ron didn't turn around for. He was too busy monitoring Lashley's gestures. "Then I don't understand what being a part of an academic community is about. It's supposed to be a search for knowledge and experiences. I don't know what college is for, if not to gather as much knowledge and experience as you can," said Lashley. "Some of us had good experiences," said Irene, taking her hands away from her chest and smiling at Warren. "I'm not questioning that," he answered quickly, after seeming to freeze on the instant of her statement. "I'm not questioning the fact that certain individuals might be serious people who have the capacity to learn and grow, but the environment of the society is a pervasive thing. It seems to be inside of us in ways that we aren't aware of." Lashley looked down at his desk and put his hand on the lit book. Ron raised his hand. He hadn't been there, but he wanted to know what he was thinking. "There is a sense where we all feel we're in some kind of hell," he said. There was a silence. Lashley stared and blinked at him. Ron figured out that since he'd stopped the flow of the conversation, he better pick it up again. "I mean, how do you expect us to be sane? when the truth is that everything around us makes no sense of all. Half of us are sitting in classrooms, while the other half of us are carrying guns and dropping bombs for some unknown reason in some unknown country on an enemy that we don't even know for sure. Ron stopped and bit his lip. He decided to continue. "Doesn't seem to me that running away from what's happening and saying it's wrong like you're doing makes any sense either." He felt the pressure in his ears after he stopped talking. He waited to see how others would respond. "When the cattle are charging over the hill," said Lashley, "it's not running away to move off in some other direction." Ron thought about The Sheep, the title of an imagined book that he told his IBM manager that he intended to write about his experience with the company. The thought that he had just moved from one herd to another flashed in his mind. He shoved it away, telling himself that he'd go crazy if he thought like that. The class never really got started again. Lashley did a fast recap of what happened to Dante on the rest of his journey, and then announced that the reading for the next class would be King Lear, a play by Shakespeare. Lashley told them they would be responsible for the first two acts of the play. "Every word of this play is important. Don't fudge on me or yourself by skipping it." The class was over. Ron had spent the last couple of minutes replaying the exchange with Lashley. He then remembered that he hadn't written the paper he'd promised to redo over the weekend. This wouldn't be the best day to tell him, but he had to tell him something. Why hadn't he written this stupid paper yesterday? He was part of the herd. As the room emptied, Ron felt it was like being driven through a corral. The shuffling sound like hooves, and the talking seemed more like grunts. He could almost taste the dust they were kicking up as they left. When he got into the hall, he stopped and turned around. Maybe he should go back and tell Lashley that he hadn't meant to embarrass him with his comment about running away. Then he could move the subject around to the trouble he was having with the paper. He waited by the door while Lashley collected the props from his desk. Irene hadn't moved and appeared to be reading. Ron figured she was paying attention to everything that was happening at the desk and had only read enough to answer in case he asked her something. "Can I talk to you a minute?" said Ron. "Okay," said Lashley, "but just for a minute, because I've got to get back to my office and get some work done." "I don't want to hold you up." "You won't hold me up for long," said Lashley, looking over at Irene, who was opening her legs ever so slowly for him. "Maybe I should find another topic for my paper." "Fine. What?" "That's my problem. I'm confused about what I should be working on. It seems like we're done with the Greeks, and I want to be working on something that's coming up." Lashley reached for one of his small cigars. "Although what you write about is subject to my approval, the choice of topic must be your own." "What about a Shakespeare play?" "I'm not sure that you're ready to work on something like that yet," said Lashley in a cold, flat voice. Ron blushed. If the rest of the class was reading a Shakespeare play, why wasn't he ready to work on one on his own? "I'd still like to try it." Lashley didn't answer. He drew in on his cigar and motioned for Irene to get up. He stared at her thighs as she brushed the wrinkles out of her skirt. Then he looked at Lashley, who was watching him watch Irene with a comically strained smile. "I'll be back in my office at 2:30. You do some specific research about what you want to write and bring it to me then." He started walking towards the door, threw a comment back over his shoulder. "I suggest that you come up with something of more interest to you than Shakespeare is at this point in your life." Ron watched them pass out of the door. It felt strange to be the last one in the class. He stared at the empty board. Except for the first day, This was the only time Lashley hadn't used it. Ron thought that he must have been very upset. He decided he needed some coffee. He wanted to avoid Rebecca if he saw her. He was going to get his coffee, pick out a topic for his paper, and then see who was willing to help on the moratorium issue of the commuter. He picked up his container and started for the library. He spied the card catalog and told himself it was a good place to start. Sharply, in an official tone, a voice called after him. "You can't bring that in here." The desk revealed the top half of a librarian. She wore a dead flower print dress covered by a pipe-stitched white sweater. Her gray hair was tinted silver and coved in a wave-like curl that broke right over the top of her nose. She picked up her glasses that hung on a beaded chain around her neck and placed them on the bridge below the wave. Ron looked down at his container, which was bubbling up through the air holes and swirling around the top of the lid. "You can't come in here with food." "This is coffee," blurted Ron. "What kind of stupid rule is that?" "It's certainly not a stupid rule," she said, inhaling indignantly. Ron noticed that the veins on her hand stood out. "It's been the rule at every library that I've ever worked for in my life." Ron thought she was a prissy old babe. "That doesn't make it right," he said. He thought of telling her about his little encounter would make an interesting article for a little editorial in the newspaper. "You're spilling it on the rug at this very instant," she said, pointing at him and raising her tone. Ron saw a man in a suit starting toward the desk. "Well, can I leave this here while I look something up?" "Outside the door," she said with exasperation as the assistant dean arrived at the desk. "Mrs. Giles, what's wrong?" said the man. He looked in disgust with Ron. "Why are you standing in here with food?" "That's the problem we've been discussing," said Mrs. Giles in her best Christian suffering way. It told the assistant dean he was sure to hear her complaining about for the next 3 days. At least 3 days of her telling every administrator she encountered how the place was being run more like a lavatory than a library. "What is your name?" he asked Ron. "Ron Tuck." Ron pronounced his last name, slurring the first letter and accenting the rest of it just enough for Mrs. Giles to think he was going to spit or say something obscene. He stared at her face after he'd said his name. She drew her sweater around her neck and started to walk away. When she was safely behind Mr. Barth, she turned around to see what was going to happen. "That's your real name?" "What do you mean, is it my real name? Can I see your ID card?" "Yeah," said Ron, taking out his wallet. "I feel like I'm being arrested." "Oh," said Dean Barth. "Have you been arrested often?" Mrs. Giles gasped audibly. They were letting killers into the college now. She felt tears starting to well in back of her eyes. She was going to quit. That was all there was to it. The trouble was that if she quit at her age, she'd have to take early retirement benefits, because she was too old for anyone else to hire. "I'm a librarian for hooligans," she thought, and they got worse each year. Although this mutation was clearly an indication of things to come. "That's none of your business," said Ron. "What are you looking for here?" said Barth. "I don't know," said Ron. "I was walking in, and she stopped me." "Because you had coffee." "Why can't I have coffee while I'm studying?" "The college provides," said the assistant dean, straightening his tie and handing Ron his ID card back, "lounges for that purpose. Can't you simply take out the book you need, bring it to the lounge where you'll be free to drink as much coffee as you please?" Ron felt like an asshole. "I didn't know which book I wanted," he muttered. We must all learn to restrain ourselves for the general benefit of others on occasion, said the assistant dean. Now, if you would be so kind as to leave until you're finished with your coffee and perhaps had a cigarette, he gestured to the pack bulging in Ron's shirt pocket, indicating that smoking was also prohibited, with a patronizing smile and a nod of his head, you'll be free to return. Ron just turned and walked out. If he played his cards right, he wouldn't have to go back there ever again. He had liked libraries when he was a little kid. He went to the library every day after school for a while. One day, the woman there asked him why he didn't like going home after school. Ron stopped going right after that. Fuck it, he thought. This is stupid shit to get caught up in when I'm as busy as I am today. He headed for the newspaper room and saw Rebecca see him from the hallway down the hall. Ah, shit, he said under his breath. He looked down at the unopened coffee container that had probably gotten cold by now. Hi, Ron, she said. I was just wondering if I was going to see you today. Yeah, said Ron. I was just thinking the same thing. He felt far away from her. She looks really good, too, he thought. Do you have time to sit around with me while I drink this coffee, he said. Can I get some, too? They headed back into the cafeteria. Ron figured that he could give this a little time, and then he would be clear for the staff meeting. Her eyes were sparkling as she stared at him. So, she began, what have you been thinking about? Ron didn't know where to begin. A lot of things, he said. Did you think about the play that we saw? She said enthusiastically. Not at all, Ron stared back at her. She might as well know the truth. Oh, said Rebecca, feeling like a deflated paper bag. Ron sensed that he said the wrong thing. I mean, I wouldn't mind thinking about the play, but so many other things are happening right now. He paused and grinned. I didn't say that I hadn't been thinking about you, though. Rebecca smiled and let her eyes search his face. He wondered what their impressions were as he watched them. There's going to be a moratorium on the 18th, he said. What's that? I'm trying to make it an effort to educate people about the war. Instead of Bio 101, you can learn something about defoliants and germ warfare. Is the college going to let you do that? She said, opening her eyes a little wider. They're not going to have any choice, said Ron darkly. His mind went back to the tape he'd heard the night before. He couldn't shake the feeling that the Weather Underground was partially right. And more than that, they were living it instead of just talking about it. Don't get in trouble, she said. Why not, said Ron. We're already in pretty big trouble, don't you think? Just because you don't see it all around you all the time, it's no excuse for acting like it doesn't exist. It's got to be more than, let's talk about the war and other controversial issues. What do you think I should do? She said defensively. Get involved, snapped Ron. Stop worrying about whether your father makes your brother slice up dead deer before they're out slicing up live people.